work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special episode of TFL Car Chat, and today we're going to be talking about all things hydrogen. And I've got a very special guest here, Brian DeBruin, who's the director of the Colorado Hydrogen Network. Thank you for coming on, Brian.
Well, thanks, Roman. I mean, it's really, I think, an honor to be here. And
thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I've listened to the show for a while. I really love it. So.
Well, that's kind of you to say. And the reason I wanted you on is because, of course, the promise of hydrogen and hydrogen power has been dangled in front of us for so many years, and it's been a story of disappointment.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wanted to get the lay of the land from you, find out, you know, is hydrogen a viable fueling method for, you know, cars and trucks? And where do you, kind of see the future of hydrogen? But let's start with the basics. Tell me about the Colorado Hydrogen Network.
Well, the reason the Colorado Hydrogen Network exists is because we really have no hydrogen market. And by that, I mean, if you want to invent a new cell phone or washing machine or whatever, you can sell it and people can buy it and use it. But with hydrogen, we've got to have both the source and the user kind of at the same time. And so the reason that I founded the Colorado Hydrogen Network was to try to get this whole ecosystem going by bringing together sources like fuel stations and the users like the fleets and things like that, and even individuals. But then besides that, you need the automobiles. And then the other problem is that any new technology, when it first comes out, is way more expensive than the incumbent. So we need support for that. So I started the Colorado Hydrogen Network. It's a nonprofit organization, and it's really just meant to be kind of a matchmaker to bring all those things together.
So you're kind of trying to solve that chicken or the egg,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And, I don't have big funding, so I can't really throw money at it. So I have to rely on kind of cajoling and convincing people to do it. Maybe I'll go on to say that one of the things I did was I founded the New Day Hydrogen, which is a startup company, to do fueling. But their approach is whole cloth. They have the fueling. They're getting financing for the stations. They're going out and enlisting fleets to be the off-takers. They've gone out and they've found the vehicles, which in this case is commercial vehicles, because a passenger car, those people are probably using half a kilogram of hydrogen a day, whereas with a commercial vehicle, they might use 10 kilograms a day. So much more cost effective to get your return on your investment. So that's kind of where we are in Colorado, and we're finally starting to get some good traction here, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, but let's kind of take a giant step back and kind of explain to people who aren't familiar with how hydrogen powers internal combustion engines. Actually, I should say cars that used to have internal combustion engines. So obviously people know, and I'm not sure actually people know that, because I was listening to a car radio show, and the guy giving car buying advice seemed to be confused about the fact that you don't need to plug in a plug-in hybrid. So let's just define how all this world works. So obviously, when cars first came around, they were electric.
Yeah.
And then that technology, because of batteries, didn't quite take off. There were also steam-powered cars. The problem with a steam-powered car is you got to get up like, you know, an hour before you go anywhere put the kettle on the boil so you have steam so you can power the car. And then, of course, the internal engine kind of took off, internal combustion engine. And so everybody knows what a gas engine is, right? You pour gasoline in the tank, gasoline goes into the engine, there's a spark, an air, it combusts, moves the piston up and down, which eventually turns the wheels. Very old and straightforward technology. And then the next, I think, easiest technology to understand would be electric vehicles, because they're basically just a giant battery mounted to kind of a skateboard chassis, which allows you to plug it into the wall outlet or, you know, depending how fast you want to charge it, a level two charger, a level three charger, and then, you know, drive it around. Those typically have around 300 miles of range. Even though I was just reviewing a Lucid Grand Touring, it had over 500 miles of range. Blew my mind, Brian. And the great thing about electric vehicles is that there's, you know, your house is your garage. Mm-hmm. There's power everywhere. And Mr. Musk kind of solved that chicken and the egg problem, because unlike the, let's call them legacy auto manufacturers, he actually decided that in order to sell electric vehicles, he has to build out an electric
And that was charging network. I'm waiting for somebody to do that with hydrogen, and they're not doing it.
Let me move this a little closer. Okay, there we go. Okay, they can hear you. And so the problem with hydrogen is that we don't have anybody who's committed to that. But let's talk about hydrogen, because hydrogen vehicles are essentially electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
Exactly. Don't, you guys who hate electric vehicles, don't turn off, okay? Because the way most hydrogen vehicles work is you fill your tank, and it's got to be a very special tank because hydrogen is compressed.
Right.
So you can get a lot of it into a small space. And the issue when you compare hydrogen to, let's say, internal combustion is the caloric value. In other words, the energy value that hydrogen has is not as high as internal combustion.
Per volume.
Per volume, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so you put it into a tank, and then it goes through a fuel cell, which generates electricity and water, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's the only waste.
Yeah. I you know, we had a Nexo and we drove it up Pikes Peak, and I noticed them when the car was really using a lot of hydrogen. As we were driving up and taking the corners, just a big puddle of water was splashing out of the car.
Wow.
And I always thought to myself, if an electric hydrogen car manufacturer were smart, they'd actually have that like water bubbling through some available slot that you could see actually in the car. So you could actually see it coming out of the fuel cell. And you could probably actually fill up a water bottle with it, even though it's not, it's distilled, right, when it comes out?
Oh, it's absolutely pure. As a matter of fact, there was a Nexo TV commercial where they had a Nexo running, and the exhaust line was running out to a bubble, and they had an athlete in the bubble on a treadmill, and she's running, and she's breathing basically the exhaust, because there's actually quite a bit of air that comes out of the exhaust, and so she was able to, it's probably pretty steamy and hot in there, I would imagine, but yeah, indeed. And, you know, a fuel cell, you mentioned that, maybe if we unpack
that. How does a fuel cell work?
Well, what a fuel cell looks like, if you were to look at one, it looks like a stack of plastic plates that have some metallization on those. And you've got air on one side and you've got hydrogen on the other. And through that process, you basically produce electricity. And then the waste is water. And indeed, I don't know, probably a lot of your listeners are scientific geeks kind of like we are. And when you were a kid, you may have stuck a couple of spoons in a glass of water, maybe added a little salt to make it more conductive, hook it up to a battery, and oxygen boils off of one electrode and hydrogen off the other. And you can reverse that process to actually get your electricity back again. Instead of using electricity to make it, you're actually creating electricity. So that's how a fuel cell works.
It's pretty simple.
It is pretty simple. And then, of course, there are internal combustion hydrogen engines, which aren't going to be as efficient as a fuel cell, but it's certainly an interim step. And I know a lot of the truck manufacturers like Cummins, the big diesel manufacturers, JCB, Caterpillar, and so forth, are actually planning on having, as an initial step, an internal combustion engine that's burning hydrogen.
Mm. So what then happens with that electricity, of course, is it goes into a battery. Usually it's a smaller battery. So let's say a typical electric car has a 100 kilowatt hour battery, mm-hmm. give or take. Hydrogen cars have much smaller batteries.
Right.
Because they're just temporary storage, so maybe 2 kilowatt hours, mm-hmm. kind of like a plug-in hybrid. And then, of course, the battery powers the motor, which then right. turns the wheels, and you can have two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. Now, I was talking to Toyota a while ago, and they did try using hydrogen in the latest version of the GR Corolla, which is kind of the sports car. Yeah. And the problem I heard from them, from their engineers, is that when you burn hydrogen outright, it does create a lot of pollution.
Well, it creates some. Now, there's no carbon dioxide because there's no carbon in the fuel, but because you're burning air, which has nitrogen in it, you do create some nitrous oxide, which is a pollutant. But catalytic converters can clean that up. Mm. And so you can get it very low. It's not perfect, but whereas a fuel cell car, only water vapor, that's all that's coming out.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if we had Mr. Musk here, he would kind of ask the question, and I think this is something that people have asked, why do you want this intermediary step? Why not just put the electricity into the car, store it in a battery, and then use that battery to, you know, power the wheels? And the answer, I suppose, to that is what?
Well, that's a really, really good question. And that's actually the key question, because to charge a battery car takes time, as we all know. And a lot of people think, well, we're going to get that down. Well, there's only so low you can get it, because it has nothing to do with the battery. You could have a perfect battery, and you're still going to have, you know, 15 or 20 minutes of charge time for your car, because you can't jam that much energy into the car all at once. I ran the numbers one time. Here's some fun numbers. Mm. If you were to charge, say, just a Tesla in about 3 minutes, like you can fuel a gasoline or a hydrogen car, it would take 8 million watts. Whew. So how much is that? Well, that's like 360 houses worth of energy. So, okay, maybe you could do that for one car, but if you had a fuel station or a charging station with a whole bunch of vehicles, that's so much energy, you'd have to have transmission lines going there. So the point is that
you'd probably also burn down the lines going from the charger
to
the car.
Yeah, you'd have to have big electrodes. I'm glad we have visual. You have electrodes coming out, one at each bumper to, it's like bringing life to Frankenstein,
so,
right?
So it solves that problem of recharge time. You're also, obviously, you know, when you build a battery, you're creating a very usable thing. But then what do you do with it once people are done with it?
Right? Well, there's those issues, too. But, you know, I think that could be solved. The thing that we could never solve is getting the convenience of a gas or hydrogen vehicle, of having that really fast fuel time. Now, if you charge at home or charge at work and you only drive around town and don't deplete the battery, you know, battery vehicle's better than hydrogen or gasoline. But so many people look at a vehicle and say, well, you know what? Every year I go visit Aunt Tilly in Chicago, and I don't want to be stopping every 150 miles for 20 minutes to charge. And indeed, the four big polling agencies, Gallup and J.D. Power and some of these, have gone out and asked people, do you have any intention of buying a battery vehicle? And only 20 to 40% said, yeah, I think someday I might buy one. But we have a big pollution problem. The planet's heating up, whether you agree with that or not, it is. And the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is going up, and that's what's causing it. So we have got to convert every vehicle out there, from motorcycles all the way to the big 18-wheelers, to some form of zero emissions. And a few of those are going to work great with battery, but we need an alternative. I mean, think about it. How many things in life only have one choice? You know, cell phones, there's a lot of choices. Maybe U-Haul trailers are the one thing where there's only one company out there. But we've got to have choices, because we've got to convert everything, or we're just going to destroy ourselves as
a
society.
I mean, I could see a lot of comments, but let's talk about the ones that are probably more valid than the knee-jerk reaction of this is just, you know, a political hot potato that I don't believe in. But let's talk about kind of the more valid ones, which would be you're just moving that, you know, carbon downstream or upstream in this case, right? Mm-hmm. From, you know, burning gas in the car to burning coal at the power plant. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, there's other ways to generate hydrogen than using an electrolyzer, which takes water and electricity, makes hydrogen, and usually just vent the oxygen. There's such a thing as natural hydrogen wells, which we're just finding out about. The U.S. Geological Survey right here in Golden, they're doing a lot of work to find that. Bill Gates' Breakthrough Energy just gave $91 million to the company Coloma to go find natural hydrogen. So it does occur naturally underground. Why didn't we know about this? Well, scientists always assumed it wasn't there, so they were ignoring it, actually.
And it is, hydrogen is the most, at least scientists will tell you, the most common element in the universe.
Well, it is, but it's really light and it's kind of volatile, so it tends to want to escape. And that's why the scientists thought, well, we'll never find it. It's just going to be gone if it is created. But it turns out that's not true.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other place you can get zero carbon, really low cost hydrogen is in old petroleum wells. And that process injects oxygen into the ground. Hydrogen forms underground, and you only let hydrogen out through a palladium filter. Palladium's a metal. And that's absolutely zero carbon and very, very cheap. So electrolysis isn't the only game in town out there.
So, you know, a lot of especially classic car fans, have been holding up the hope of like zero emission fuels, which are another way that people are starting to think about maintaining internal combustion. And that process, of course, is much more complicated, right? I mean, we're going from electric cars, which are relatively straightforward. You generate the electricity and hopefully you do it in a renewable way with, you know, solar or wind farms or something similar. And then you kind of pipe it or transmit it, and there's no pipe, to your house or to a charging station. And then if you want to do hydrogen, then you can, I guess, you, like you're saying, find natural ways where it occurs, but then you have to build out a hydrogen network throughout the United States. And that's really been the stumbling block, because I remember when the first Mirai, we've got it up here, came out. That's the second generation Mirai. And then the Hyundai Nexo came out in California. There was a lot of excitement, a lot of energy around hydrogen. At that point, there were something like 30 hydrogen stations in California, most of them being in LA and San Francisco. And then they started coming online, and then all of a sudden, it's like we hit a brick wall, and Shell actually just announced that they're going away from hydrogen, and then we've got fewer and fewer hydrogen stations. So how do we solve that problem?
Yeah, that's a good point. And as a matter of fact, the last episode that I did from my podcast.
Your podcast?
Oh, my podcast is the Hydrogen Now Cast. It's all one word.
Hydrogen Now.
Got about 86 episodes out there. And the last episode that I did, we talked about this, I call it a debacle of what's happening in California.
It's a train wreck.
Well, they threw all this money at it. They built, they've got over 50 stations now, but the price of hydrogen has crept up to $33 and $36 a kilogram, which it should be more like $13 if it's going to compete with gasoline.
So let's talk about that. So $36 a kilogram.
Oh, it's crazy.
Compared to $3 a gallon for gas.
Right.
If you were to translate that into gallons, you know, dollars per gallon, what would that come to? Because last time I did that, it was like $19 a gallon.
Well, that's a really good point. So gasoline, a gallon of gasoline and a kilogram of hydrogen just coincidentally contain the same amount of energy.
Oh, that's interesting.
But a fuel cell car will get 2.5 times the mileage of a gasoline car. So if you're paying, just for round numbers, say a dollar a gallon for gasoline, you can now pay $2.50 a kilogram for hydrogen, and your cost per mile would be the same. So whatever the cost of gasoline is in California, multiply times
probably,
2.5.
Probably, and that's $5 a gallon.
Yeah, and that's a fair price for the hydrogen.
So, but why was hydrogen so much more expensive?
Well,
let's go back. So let's take a big step back. So typical gas tank is about, let's call it, depending on the kind of vehicle, it's 15, 20 gallons.
Yeah.
How many kilograms of hydrogen will fit in a typical Mirai or Nexo or the new Honda that's coming?
Well, the hydrogen takes up more space. First of all, it's got to be in highly compressed cylinders. Matter of fact, here's an interesting fact. The compression of that hydrogen is 10,000 PSI, which if you picture it, say a standard sedan is 3,300 pounds. So picture three cars on a steel plate balancing on a 1-inch cube. And the pressure on the ground, that's how much that 10,000 PSI is. But because of the high pressure, the tanks can't be conformal. Okay. They've got to be cylinders to withstand that pressure. Now, Mirai...
Kind of the same reason those deep submersibles are cylinders, right?
Yes, or spheres.
Or spheres.
Yeah, because it's much stronger.
Yeah.
Now, Mirai has, about 75 gallons worth of volume there.
Yeah.
And some of the tanks are under the back seats.
It's got like three tanks.
Yeah, it's got three tanks in it. So... hydrogen is a difficult thing to handle and to transport, and that's part of the reason why it's been so slow on the take-up here.
Do when it's transported, is it also super cool to get it to compress?
Not in the car,
but in the tanker or in the...
Yeah, in a tanker, you could do that. Now, It takes energy to convert it from a gas to a liquid because you got to pump a lot of heat out, and so that eats into your profit margin, of course, but you can get 4,000 gallons in a tanker, whereas you could only get maybe, 300 kilograms in a gas transport vehicle. So it is much, it's probably worth it to liquefy it and transport it that way.
Because you can get more hydrogen.
And if you think about it, your average neighborhood gas station, if it was getting delivered hydrogen in, as a gas, probably is going to have a couple or three deliveries a day. So it's not just the cost, it's that traffic of all these vehicles going in and out. So probably we will see mostly liquid hydrogen being delivered. It's converted to a gas to go in the vehicle.
Yeah, and I remember reading initially when, you know, the first generations of these cars came out, because it's so super cooled, the nozzles were actually freezing to the cars. Is that an issue that's still a problem, or have they solved that?
Well, they've solved the icing up of the nozzles.
Okay.
But... another funny thing about hydrogen, most gases, and a lot of the listeners will know this, if you take a bicycle pump and you start pumping and compressing, it gets hot, right?
Yeah.
Well, hydrogen, helium, and neon are three perverse gases that have the opposite.
They get cold.
And so if you're putting the fuel, the hydrogen, into a tank, it's expanding and it's getting hot. So they have to pre-chill down to minus 40 centigrade Fahrenheit, the same thing, in order to do that. So these are all the things that make hydrogen just a pain in the neck to work with. You got to compress it.
I'm starting to see why it's not spreading across the country like wildfire.
Yeah, but you know,
Speaking of wildfire, I was going to try to do this podcast without mentioning the Hindenburg, but you know, people are going to just go there, right?
Well, and you know, that's forever linked in our minds.
To hydrogen,
you know, like
yeah.
certain words, you hear a word, and by association, there's another.
I'll tell you a funny story. So I was at the It was a military conference where basically in D.C. They have all these suppliers of machine guns, tanks, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And we sell this stuff to other governments. And so all the other guns. Anyway, I was there because the U.S. Army had worked with GM to build the ZH2, which was a Colorado converted to hydrogen. And there are a lot of benefits to using hydrogen to power a military vehicle. First and foremost, they're quiet, so you can sneak up on the enemy.
Right.
And then, of course, you can use a fuel cell to generate electricity, which in the example they gave me, they said that they could use to generate electricity to power like a mobile hospital.
And it also is producing...
I'm thinking weapon systems are more likely, but you know, hospital.
There are emergency vehicles out there that provide electricity, and they also provide drinking water because is pure water.
And water, yeah. So if you're working in a very dry environment, you know, Middle East, right, then you have water that's coming out of these vehicles. Anyway, I was talking to the GM guys. I said, you know, how much do you have to compress this? And they said, well, we compress it a lot. And I said, well, what happens if somebody shoots at this thing, right, which in a combat situation, they said they might. And they said, oh, we've got like 3 inches of carbon fiber for the fuel tank. And I'm like, okay, but you know, you've got all this compressed gas in there. Have you tested? And he goes, oh, yeah. We shot some stuff at it and it held up. And I look at the military guy and I go, are you good with that? And he goes, oh, we've got bigger stuff we're going to shoot at it.
But you know, the story I've heard to that point is that the Army was trying to see what would it take to blow it up?
Yeah.
And I've seen pictures of the tanks. You can shoot it with a high-powered rifle. It puts a hole in and the hydrogen leaks out. And so they brought out bigger stuff, you know, the bombs. And they were essentially destroying the vehicle, and the tanks were surviving because these things are so sturdy. And they've got to be to withstand 10,000 PSI.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting that all of the hydrogen cars are actually from Asia. So Honda is about to introduce the new – what's the new Honda that's coming out?
It's the CR-V.
Yeah.
It's called the E:FCV.
Okay. So we've got that. We've got the second generation of Mirai. And Hyundai just killed the Nexo, which was their hydrogen car. And I think the reason, at least the reason I've read, that the Asian manufacturers like hydrogen is because it's a fuel source that they can create. And so if you're in Japan and you don't have deep oil reserves like we do here in America, then if you switch over to hydrogen, you can use any form of, you know, wind power, solar power, tidal power, I guess, to actually, you know, create hydrogen. And then you have a fuel source that's continually renewable. Is that fair to say?
Well, it is. And, you know, countries other than the U.S. have different economics as far as what their energy costs, the distances they drive. I mean, you've been to Europe a number of times, and there's little towns and they're close together. You don't have to go very far. So those kind of things kind of determine which way the technology goes. Plus, I think the Japanese government is helping the businesses there. I know the German government, French government is helping a little bit more. We're getting some help here. The Inflation Reduction Act gave $8 billion to create some hydrogen hubs. So things are changing, but the transit systems here and in Europe and Asia are a lot different.
Yeah, yeah, that makes complete sense. So let's talk about what's happening in Colorado. Recently, the state was awarded some money.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
You were awarded some money, I guess.
Well, that's kind of a little bit of a story.
Okay,
but
tell me. Yeah, let's hear it.
So I founded the Colorado Hydrogen Network to try to get this ecosystem going, to try to bring the players together, to try to influence the government a little bit. And frankly, it's worked. Recently, in January, Colorado State University, who's the prime contractor, along with New Day Hydrogen, which was a little startup company that I started, give a shout out to them, got a contract for $9 million from the Federal Highway Administration to put in three fuel stations here in Colorado. They're going to be one in Fort Collins, which is where one of the CSU campuses is, one in Denver, and then one in Pueblo, where there's another campus.
Okay, so tell me about what's this fuel station going to look like? I take it as not like a shell.
No. It's well, that's the other issue about trying to start an entire market is you've got to address the scale, right? I mean, you could produce really cheap hydrogen at a million tons a day, but if you don't have anybody to buy it, that's not going to work. So they're starting small. It's an on-site electrolysis. So the only inputs to the station are water and electricity, generates the hydrogen on-site, stores it, and then dispenses it into the vehicles. And so those will be coming out in 2025. And then there's another company here.
So this is like maybe a shipping container?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. It's in shipping containers. Yeah. And the nice thing about that is it's portable. So these will put out enough fuel for maybe 10 trucks a day or 20 trucks a day, maybe 100 cars a day, but eventually you're going to outgrow it, right? So what you would do at that point is you would take those shipping containers, you move them to a new site where you want to start the market, and you'd replace it with a permanent fuel station. Because a permanent fuel station is two or three times as expensive as just some shipping containers.
So basically, to make this hydrogen station work, and we're talking about a shipping container now, you need water and electricity.
Yeah. And by the way, people always ask, well, you know, Colorado and other places are really short on water. Does this take a lot of water? Well, it doesn't. The answer is no. But to compare, to tell you how much it is, a fuel station, kind of your average size, would take about 1/6 the water of your average restaurant.
Hmm.
And it also takes a lot less than making gasoline. Gasoline takes about 3.5 gallons of water per gallon of gasoline to make it. And obviously, if gasoline's going away and it's being replaced by batteries and hydrogen, now you've got that water available.
Okay, so you're addressing the issue of people are worried that you might be starving the state of water to create hydrogen. And how does the water work? You're taking the water, it's H2O, right? So you're breaking the H off of the 2O.
Yeah. Yeah, you just use the electricity. It breaks those molecules apart. You capture the hydrogen, and you could capture the oxygen, but most of the time it's not economically viable, so it just gets vented.
Okay, gotcha. And who's going to buy this? I mean, if I have a Mirai, can I then go to Fort Collins and fill up.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because, I mean, that is obviously the sticking point.
Because when we talked to each other, I started looking for Mirais, and they're actually selling them. There's some in Denver,
which
is fascinating because I don't know how you fill them up. But
you know, I get calls all the time, and people say, oh, I just took this Mirai in trade. Where can I get fuel? And it's coming, but
you can't.
You can't. So it is tricky, and, you know, that's probably the biggest criticism. But in the long run here, once we get the system going, a hydrogen car is going to work just like a gas or diesel. You pull in the station, 3 minutes, boom, you fill the tank, and you're on your way. Whereas with a battery vehicle, you're always going to be stuck with this issue. If you're on a long trip, having to go to a fast charger, and it takes time, maybe you have to wait.
Yeah, but now you're stuck with this issue where you have potentially three stations only.
No, I know. And so actually what I'm going to propose to the automakers is that we do a pilot program here where we have some beta testers.
Yeah.
We bring in a small captive fleet of vehicles, and they start using the stations. Because the problem here in trying to initiate this market is you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, right? Chicken or the egg.
Yeah, and I mean, if you can throw billions of dollars at it, you could build a dozen stations or something and kick off the market. That's probably not going to happen unless, you know, another Elon Musk has a warm spot in his heart for hydrogen like Elon did for battery cars.
Yeah, yeah. The other issue with, of course, the Mirai, the Nexo, and the new Honda is that the cars just depreciate like crazy.
Yeah.
So when they were sold, if I remember right, not only were they severely discounted, but you also got a credit card, I think, for up to $15,000 worth of hydrogen. So basically, it amounted to the automaker almost paying you to buy the car.
Well, that's right. And Toyota had the idea to help promote it. They would give this fuel credit, which has kind of backfired in a way because now people aren't really paying out of their own pocket, so they're not as sensitive to the raising price of hydrogen.
Because it's Toyota's
money. Yeah, and I really believe personally that the automaker should have put like one hydrogen station at a dealer in each of the major markets, because that would have at least allowed people to start buying it. Then others could see, hey, there's not enough fuel stations. Let's build a fuel station. And it would kind of leapfrog or whatever, get that market going.
Yeah. So just in terms of value, I know if you do a quick search for Mirais, you could probably pick one of those up for $5,000 to $7,000 right now. For the first generation, in California, they're not holding their value, but that's a whole nother ball of wax. But here's also the issue that I think that the automakers, at least the legacy automakers, don't seem to understand. And I thought they would have gotten this from Mr. Musk. So when Musk started Tesla, he said, "Well, we need both. We need the car and we need the power source." So he built out the supercharger network. And that to me was a strong signal if I were an automaker saying, "Hey, if I want to build electric cars, I need to actually go out and invest in that." And it's ironic that none of them have done that. I mean, the only one who's done that is Volkswagen, because they were forced to do it because of the Dieselgate scandal. So they were forced to invest, I think it was originally $2 billion into Electrify America, which ballooned into something like $20 billion last time I checked. And the problem when you force somebody to do something, they're not exactly eager to do it right. and so it's actually backfired in a lot of ways on the car manufacturers, because if you're a Tesla, then you've got this pretty much bulletproof network that incorporates seamlessly into the navigation of the car. So if you're taking a road trip, you can say, I want to go from here, let's say, to Austin, Texas. It'll tell you where to stop, for how long to stop. And Electrify America, because it doesn't have that same very tight integration with auto manufacturers, you end up with situations where, you know, you'll see it. There's an EA station, you'll get there, and I think this is becoming commonplace. Half of them are not powered for whatever reason. Or often you'll get a case where you try to plug your car in and there's a handshake that takes place between the charger and the car, and that handshake doesn't work, so it doesn't allow you to charge it. It's just made for a mess of a charging situation for non-Tesla cars. And of course, now Tesla has opened their charging network to non-Teslas, but that rollout is really slow.
Yeah, it is. And you know, this is my big frustration. And part of the reason why I started the Colorado Hydrogen Network is that there is no leadership out here, like a energy czar or something, to say, all right, everybody, we need to get some charging networks set up, some hydrogen fueling networks set up. Let's start putting money to that. And I got real excited when the Inflation Reduction Act was putting out what their $8 billion to build these hydrogen hubs. I thought, oh, great, they're finally going to try to seed the market. And they didn't really do that. They're kind of putting money into the businesses that were already doing some hydrogen, like with the petroleum industry and so forth. Really frustrating. And, you know, I don't have any money. I'm just a retired engineer from Honeywell. And so I'm out there trying to get this message out, trying to bring the parties together to promote this, but it's slow. And, you know, like I said earlier, we've got to convert every vehicle over to zero emissions. And so, batteries alone aren't going to do it.
So when you say that, I hear people out there saying, you know, you'll take my Hemi from my cold, dead hands.
Yeah.
Because when you say things like Czar, people are thinking to themselves, you know, I want choice. I don't want to have hydrogen or electrification.
And I'm not saying force anything on people. Yeah. I'm saying have the vision and the insight to say, this is what we need so people do have a choice. You know, let's give them the choice of battery vehicles and hydrogen vehicles because they have different use cases, different purposes, and they're just both needed.
So let's kind of switch topics just for a second because, you know, obviously I've been talking about cars because this is TFL Car Chat, but really where hydrogen has found some traction and is starting to take off, not just here in America but around the world, is with trucks and big trucks.
Right.
Semi-trucks, you know, tractor-trailer rigs. Why is that? Why does it work better for commercial applications like tractor-trailer rigs versus cars that we normally drive?
These are great questions. I think you've done your homework or just you have enough background. But if you want to try to run an 18-wheeler on batteries, you're going to eat up half your cargo space just for batteries. And then it's a lot of weight, so you're cutting down on your mileage as well. So when you start looking at just the practicality and the engineering aspects of it, you really need hydrogen.
So let me explain what you're saying.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the problem with the Tesla semi truck. So, you know, most big rigs can tow or haul up to 80,000 pounds. Yeah. But when that 80,000 pounds, a large chunk of that is the weight of the battery, that means you can put less stuff
right
into the trailer as opposed to having more batteries in the tractor. So instead of getting, I don't know, 50,000 pounds worth of Costco TVs, you can only do 30,000 pounds because you've got this big battery that's
right
using up a lot of that vehicle's capacity for hauling stuff.
Right, and it's even worse than that. You think about duty cycle. You know, your own personal vehicle, you drive it to work or school or whatever, and then it could sit a lot of the day. But a commercial vehicle, I mean, some of those 18-wheelers are driven continuously. They have a team of drivers. And so what is it going to take to charge those vehicles?
It's going to take a lot.
A lot. Well, people have proposed swapping out the batteries rather than charge it, mm-hmm. just put a fresh one on. So you could do that more quickly.
Yeah,
and they may even do that with hydrogen tanks at some point.
They do that in China. They do that in Norway, I believe,
yeah.
for cars. But it's that also has a slew of issues with it.
Well, true. And, you know, okay, that battery you gave me wasn't as good as the one I had, you know, yeah. Unfair and all that. But it's not just the big rigs either. I mean, think of your local Amazon or whatever deliveries in a box truck or flatbeds like tow trucks and those kind of vehicles. They're driven a lot. And they also take a lot of energy. And a lot of them may have power offtakes to, you know, run things like a bucket truck. You've got to run the pumps for that. It just is beyond what a battery can do. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people think, well, look at how cell phones have improved and computers have improved and gotten so much better. Aren't the battery cars going to do that as well? Not really, because we're bumping our heads up against the laws of physics of just how much energy you can put in a certain space and also how fast you can charge it.
Yeah, the other thing, I was asking an engineer from Hyundai, and they have a hydrogen-powered big rig.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at, I think it was at the LA Auto Show. And I said, why is hydrogen so much better than a battery? And he said, well, because a truck just has a lot more room for big tanks. So in the case of the Hyundai, you've had the cab, right? And then there's that section behind the cab before you get to the hitch, I guess, for the trailer. But that whole section was just big tanks of hydrogen. So yeah. You can easily store a lot more hydrogen. Because if you have to have three tanks in a Mirai, where do you put the fourth tank, right? You're really cutting into passenger and luggage space at that point. But with the truck, you've got tons of room to work with.
Right, right.
So do you see a future where we've got hydrogen-powered commercial vehicles running around the country?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think we'll probably see that before a lot of passenger cars. But you know what? If we start building fuel stations to support these trucks, the cars can use them. And so I think that'll almost be a follow-on.
Now, here's another question that or maybe a lesson that we can learn from electrification, right? With electrification, There are, God, what, four standards worldwide, right, for the plugs? So you've got CHAdeMO, which Japanese use, which gives you the potential of sending power from the car to the house and vice versa. Then, of course, you've got the NACS standard, North American Charging Standard, which is Tesla. Then there's a Chinese standard. And then there's the the CCS standard, which is what non-Teslas use. Mm-hmm. How do you fuel a hydrogen car? Is there a standard plug type?
There is.
Okay, good.
All right. There's actually an SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers, has a standard, J2601, for the fueling protocol, and there's another standard for the nozzles. And so that is worldwide standardized. Now, there are two flavors, I'll say, of hydrogen, two pressures.
Yep.
There's a lower pressure, 350 bar, which is what, about 5,000 PSI. And then there's the 700 bar, which is about 10,000 PSI. The cars use the higher pressure because their tanks are smaller. Trucks typically have used the lower pressure because it's easier to deal with. You don't have to pre-chill it as much, but you can't get as much on board. And so some of the big 18-wheelers will probably start using 700 bar for that and may even start using liquid, believe it or not.
All right. So where does most of this hydrogen come from today? Is it mainly natural occurring or is it mainly manufactured? And are there different grades of hydrogen? So I had a friend of mine, Alex on Autos, if you guys watch his YouTube channel, he had an EXO and he was telling me that there are different grades of hydrogen. There's like medical grade and there's commercial grade. Explain that to me.
All right. Different grades? Well, for fueling, it's all one grade. Okay. And that's covered by that SAE standard that I mentioned. But there has been talk, if you have an internal combustion engine, it could use pretty dirty hydrogen.
Okay. And so, what makes hydrogen dirty? There's something else?
There's impurities in it. So it may have some sulfur in it.
So like medical grade would be very, very pure.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, fuel cells need very pure hydrogen or you will contaminate the electrodes and things that are in there.
Okay.
So there's been talk about using a lower...
So it's like diesel, right? Like low sulfur and high sulfur.
Yeah, almost. But there's
sticks and stones if you go.
Yeah, water is another impurity. Although a fuel cell likes a little bit of water, keeps it moist, keeps its complexion nice. But there's been talk about having a lower grade for the internal combustion engines like the trucks. But now you have to have a parallel system. And so time will tell how that shakes out. I don't think we'll probably do that. I think we'll probably stay with high purity so that all vehicles can use it equally.
When you burn oxygen as opposed to running it through a fuel cell, does it also then create water or is that not something that happens in that combustion?
Oh, in combustion, unfortunately, you're burning air, which is part nitrogen. Right. I mentioned this earlier. And so when that nitrogen is part of that combustion process, you get nitrous oxides. We call them NOx.
So basically what the problem that diesels have.
Yeah. And NOx is a greenhouse gas.
Yeah.
But catalytic converters drop that way down. And here's an interesting point. There's a company here up in, I think it's near Windsor, called Super Turbo.
Okay.
And they make this real trick. It's a combination turbocharger, supercharger for diesel engines. So they can absolutely tweak the fuel air mixture for any load, any RPM, and just knock that down as low as they can. So a little shout out to Super Turbo there.
Can an internal combustion engine that's meant to run on gasoline run hydrogen? If you were to, switch the hoses.
Yeah.
if it was that easy, but.
Well, I'm a little out of my element here. I believe it can.
Okay.
The problem, of course, is that it's not that efficient. So you're going to need just a boatload of hydrogen, to equal the amount of range you had with your gasoline.
Okay. This is interesting. I like playing with hydrogen. Now, let's talk about longevity. So one of the questions I had I'm going to say GM engineer, but Honda and GM have had this longstanding partnership in building fuel cell cars.
Yeah.
Or at least in building fuel cells.
Mm-hmm.
So the cool thing is, and when I was at this conference, I was looking at the original fuel cell that the two companies built, and it was tall. It was like a small refrigerator.
Yeah.
And then the version two was maybe the size of one of those refrigerators you would have at the college campuses. Mm-hmm. So over time, the fuel cells have gotten smaller.
Well, it's like everything. Look at the first cell phones. They were brick.
Yeah, exactly. But I said, what's the longevity of a fuel cell? And they said that on the first gen, it was only like 75,000 miles. So fuel cells do, I guess, wear out over time or maybe get contaminated.
Contamination is really, yeah.
Well, do you know what the current state of the art is?
Yeah, you're catching me off guard here. I really don't know.
Okay, fair.
No idea. But
that's also a problem, right? Because a car today is probably engineered to go 250,000 miles. So you don't want to have to swap out a fuel cell after 100,000 miles because I'm guessing that's going to be as expensive as swapping out a battery.
Well, yeah, at least. And Probably about the same. But I think in the long run, we're going to see great longevity. I mean, look at cars. I mean, back in the 70s, my first car, you were doing good to get 100,000 miles. And part of that was probably the lead in the gas and some other things. But nowadays, I mean, I typically drive a car 250,000 miles before I get rid of it. And so I think we'll see the same thing with fuel cells.
So as a nonprofit, you're doing this to help promote the adoption of hydrogen. If there's somebody out there who's listening to this and they're like, hey, I want to get involved, how do they do that?
Well, I would recommend that you contact me. Okay. And you can do that by going to the Colorado Hydrogen Network website. And the website is just colorado-hydrogen.org. We're a nonprofit, so it's .org. And, you know, my contact information is there. I would love to talk to anybody that wants to give me a call. I guess I should be careful. You got a lot of listeners, but the phone may be ringing off the hook. But email is the absolute best way to contact me. My email address is on there. There's also a contact sheet. So you can reach out to me. And, you know, if you maybe want to start something where you live in the country, happy to help you. If you just want are curious, have questions, everybody's welcome to call.
It seems like California is leading the way in terms of the train wreck. Are we picking up the pieces here? Is that what you're trying to do?
Well, we're going to do it differently. Okay. You know, I think I mentioned earlier that in California, all of the hydrogen to the stations almost exclusively is delivered hydrogen.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of it's coming from natural gas, which is how it's been created in the past.
Right. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So when you – natural gas is mined, I guess, or –
Well, it's a well.
It's a well, yeah. If you're doing like fracking, right, it's also a byproduct of that. And it's basically methane, right?
Well, it's methane.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that was the only use of hydrogen in the past, almost exclusively.
It's usually burned, right?
It's usually
fracking,
burned.
And then you see those big flames. That's hydrogen.
Yeah. And the petroleum industry for a long time considered hydrogen a nuisance. They were just flaring it. Those flares you see, are a lot of that is
hydrogen. Okay.
But in the past, it was easy, convenient, cheap to take natural gas. You put it through a process called steam methane reforming, which basically is heat and a little bit of water, and it splits off the hydrogen. And part of the reason they did that was they needed it for the oil industry anyway. It's used to purify gasoline and stuff. So a lot of
it's used in the refining process.
It's used in the refining process. So a lot of the criticism of hydrogen is that, oh my gosh, it comes from natural gas. Well, tell you what, in the past, our electricity and our hydrogen came from fossil fuels, and in the future, probably neither will. And so, of course, the other way to do it that we've been talking about is electrolysis. You split water, or there are natural hydrogen wells, or you can use petroleum wells, but you never bring the carbon out of the ground. So it's clean. You don't have methane leaks. You also don't have carbon you have to sequester.
All right. So we first started talking, my God, it was maybe a year and a half ago, and you had mentioned that one of the cool things that was going on in Colorado was that there was a hydrogen what would you call it? Those shipping containers. What would you call those?
Oh, well, that story was
right. I guess it was like a demonstration generator that they built for DC and stuck in a shipping container.
Yeah, it was built into a shipping container by the company who is now Nel Hydrogen.
Okay.
And they were going to scrap it.
Yeah.
And my friend over at NREL, Sean Honorato, give him a shout out, was in charge of decommissioning this thing. And he called me up and he said, hey, Brian, they're just going to scrap this thing. We got to get it brought to Colorado. So I spent about 4 months dealing with Nell, convincing him we weren't going to blow ourselves up.
Okay.
And what we were doing. But the key was that we brought it out to the Colorado
NREL
State.
NREL is Natural Energy.
National
Renewable Energy Lab.
Thank you.
We got it.
I know that backwards and forwards, but just caught me off guard.
And they're just here. They're just kind of between Boulder and Golden.
Yes. Yeah. And sorry, you know, I get so used to talking to hydrogen people.
Are you from Canada?
No, Wisconsin.
Oh, are you from what part?
Milwaukee area, New Berlin.
Really? Yeah, I used to live in Janesville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife Cindy's on the lobby. She's from Wisconsin. And we drive back and forth 2 or 3 times a year,
That's a long drive.
It is, and which is why I couldn't tolerate a battery car. I mean, you know, it's just too many charging stops. But anyway, this.
You just felt that lucid.
Yeah.
I
could drive it all day.
It's probably what, 1,200 miles to Wisconsin, 1,100 miles from here?
About 1,000 actually.
About 1,000?
Not that far, yeah.
So, that car gets 520 miles of range.
I may consider that actually.
Well, they're expensive. Expensive. So, the one we had to test was 125,000 new.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. But because no one's buying Lucids and because electric cars are not in favor right now, they have just dropped like rocks. So I was looking around and I found one for sale that was 1 year old with 1,000 miles for 68,000. Can you imagine how much you lost?
Yeah.
How much money?
Well, and like you pointed out with the Mirais in California, people are taking a bath on those.
And I love bargains. Yeah. I am so tempted to go and buy a Mirai.
No, I wanted to buy one, but it's so cheap, I can't resist.
I was going to go buy one because, it's $7,000. It's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And I love the way hydrogen cars drive. So if you're curious about hydrogen, it's a completely different experience. With electric cars, of course, you've got instant torque.
Right.
Right? So it's like you floor it and it pushes you back. With internal combustion engines, obviously, it's not instant, but there's a lot of kind of like noise and, of course, intake sound. It's a whole different flavor of – it's funny. I listened to this podcast and they talk about like Porsches and how each Porsche is different and, how the flavors of Porsches change. And I'm like, that's boring compared to like driving an electric car versus a hydrogen car versus an internal combustion engine car. Now, there is different. So with a hydrogen car – you can actually hear that fuel cell working. It's almost like a little bubbling, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's this like latency to it. So because the power comes from the battery, you floor the car. Obviously, it's a small battery, so you get that kind of instant torque. But then the hydrogen cell has to replenish that battery,
fuel cell.
So it starts to work, and you can kind of feel it work. And you can kind of, and so there's kind of this like latent wave of torque that comes on when the hydrogen starts to, go and flow through the fuel cell, and when the fuel cell creates electricity. It's really cool. It's really fun.
Well, and that's an interesting point. Right now, like a Mirai and Exo and so forth have got a very small battery. It would be 5 miles of range if you ran
it. Right, like 2 kilowatt hours or something, or less.
But you think about here in Colorado, people with battery cars talk about this. So they'll go from Denver up to Silverthorne, so they've climbed 3,000-4,000 feet in elevation. When they get there, they're out of battery power. But when they come back, they're using regenerative braking and it recharges the battery. Well, unfortunately, with a fuel cell car
we took it up Pikes Peak and I filled up that battery probably in the first 3 miles.
Exactly.
And then you're using all this energy. You're recouping all this energy and there's no place for it to go.
Exactly. And so that is one of the pet peeves I have about the plug-in hybrid that Honda came out with, the CR-V. Is it's only got, I think, 29 miles of range on the battery.
That could be a 20 kilowatt hour battery.
That's 17 or something.
17, okay, that's close. Yeah.
Or 19. And so my message to the automakers is, please at least give the option to put a much bigger battery on for regenerative braking, if nothing else. Now, I know it changes the cost of the vehicle, but if I was buying a vehicle, I would love the option, like in the old days, you had an option of the engine size. Let's have an option of the battery size.
Yeah, so that brings up a really good question in my mind. So right now, all the hydrogen cars have, I'm just guessing at this, but I think it's fair. A large fuel cell. In other words, it has a lot of capacity to generate electricity, mm-hmm. but a small battery.
Right.
Why don't you go the other way? Why don't you have a smaller fuel cell and a larger battery?
And have some options.
Or
why not?
How about like a fuel cell as a range extender?
Exactly.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Exactly. We mentioned Honda with their plug-in hybrid fuel cell. Stellantis, which is another company, and this is only available over in Europe, but they've got, it's a small van, so it's great for plumbers and electricians and things like that. And it has almost an equal amount of battery power and hydrogen power. And so you could conceivably drive that most of the day, just short stops and things on the battery. And then if you happen to run low or you divert because you had an unplanned stop or something, now you can run off the fuel cell. So I think in the future, that's what we're going to see, is we're going to see almost exclusively plug-in hybrid fuel cell vehicles, because nobody wants a vehicle that they can't take a long trip in. And that's the situation with battery vehicles, unless you're very patient.
Well, and the other nice thing, using a fuel cell for a range extender, mm-hmm. For instance, BMW came out with this car called the i3, mm-hmm. which is this kind of funky little car. We bought one. We had it for about a year, and then Andre bought it for his wife, and he drives it. But the first generation had a little battery, which gave you about 50, maybe 60 miles of range. Mm-hmm. And then they took a little, I don't know why, BMW also builds motorcycles, but they use Kymco, which is a Korean company. And there was this little 600cc Kymco engine that then would fire up and then charge the battery mm-hmm. as a range extender if you ran out of juice. The problem with that was because BMW wanted it sold as a pure electric car, the EPA made them install a limiter so that you couldn't turn on that little range extender until the battery was completely depleted. And then the range extender didn't have enough power to actually propel the car at highway speed. So I remember we were driving up to Keystone, it ran out of battery right at Georgetown, you know?
Yeah.
And then the range extender kicked in, and I was like, hey, no problem. And then I'm literally doing 23 miles an hour. Yeah. Yeah. Up that really steep hill, and by the time I got to Loveland Pass, I was like 17. And that's freaking dangerous because there are trucks that are passing you. But maybe where I'm going with this is the problem with having that kind of range extender is you're carrying around two powertrains, which you would be with hydrogen as well. But with an internal combustion engine, you've got, you know, a motor that has all these moving parts that eventually wear out and break. Whereas I think a fuel cell doesn't have any moving parts.
Yeah, I think eventually fuel cells will be last the life of the car.
Yeah.
They do. I don't see any reason why not. I mean, unless you get contaminated fuel, which hopefully we don't have.
Well, that'll also be, if it's a potential problem, it'll be a real problem.
Yeah.
All right, so 2025 rolls around.
Yeah.
And you're going to have three stations, one in Fort Collins, one in Denver, and one in Pueblo, right?
Exactly.
And how, if TFL goes out and buys a Mirai, okay, how do I go and
those will be open to the public.
Okay.
Those will be public fuel stations. They'll fuel any vehicle. And so that is intended to just start this market. And then once those
Are you going to get a Mirai or a
next? Yeah. As a matter of fact, there was a car dealer. You mentioned every once in a while you see Mirais in Denver, even though there's no fueling.
Yeah.
There was a car dealer contacted me, and he had one. And I was actually thinking about buying it because of somebody you're thinking about having on.
Yeah, I was supposed to meet with Jane. So we just had the weather kind of get in the way. So I was going to go interview her and talk to her. This is, what's her company?
Yeah, the company is called Electric Green, ElectricGreen.
Yeah.
And they have she and her husband live off grid. And so they started a company originally for backup home power. And they had solar cells, go into an electrolyzer, create hydrogen, go into the tanks, and then back into a fuel cell for the electricity because they don't degrade and they don't self-discharge like a battery does. Mm. So they got the idea they're going to create some small, inexpensive fuelers. Now, their fuelers only fuel not even hardly a car a day, so they're very small, but they're a lot less expensive. The stations that we're putting in, the three stations you mentioned in 2025, probably $2.2 million, whereas Jane...
Per station?
Per station.
Okay.
Whereas Jane's saying, I don't know her pricing, but Jane and Chris are their names, I think is probably below $100,000. So it's in the neighborhood of being affordable for at least maybe a business or something like that.
So is this like a smaller version of the... of the shipping container?
It is.
Like on wheels, you know?
It is. I don't want to steal her thunder, so to speak, but their fueler, which we're going to actually have on Colorado Hydrogen Day, which we'll talk about here in a minute, is an 18-foot trailer and standard trailer width, so you could tow it with a car.
You plug water into it and electricity?
Yeah, and it runs off 220, dryer outlet or oven outlet, something like that, and feed it water. It's got water purification on it. And so we've got a lot happening here in Colorado, which is why we're planning on for the first time this year having an event for Colorado Hydrogen Day. Hoping to have the governor there.
Tell me about that.
So Hydrogen Day is on October 8th. And the reason that was picked is the date, at least in the American system, is 10/08, right? And the atomic number of hydrogen is 1.008. So it was a good day to have it. That's a Tuesday. So we're going to have it on Sunday the 6th. We're going to have an exhibit hall.
Of what month?
October 6th this year.
Okay, October 6th this year.
Yeah, this year.
And it's on your website if people want to go.
It's on the website, and it's free. It's open to the public.
It's in Denver?
It's in Denver, and it's going to be down at the, it's called the National Western site, where the National Western Stock Show is, the Coliseum, and the CSU Spur campus. And also, this is where the Denver fuel station is going to be, the new hydrogen station.
That's a good place. It's right close to 25 and 70.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful venue. It's in their new hydro building. We've got a ballroom. We're going to have exhibits. Jane is going to be there with Electric Green and a lot of other people that are doing hydrogen here in Colorado.
So it's funny. I'll just go back to Jane for a second.
Yeah.
So I did a story a while ago about GM. So GM created these mobile electric car chargers.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they worked is they had these giant hydrogen tankers, right?
Yeah.
And you would plug the charger, which is also this, this mobile trailer, into that, and it would use the hydrogen to then generate electricity. So she's doing it the other way around.
Well, that's kind of a funny story because there are situations where either you can't get the power for a fast charger for battery cars, or because of time of day pricing, everybody wants to charge up when the electricity is the most expensive. So people have talked about having hydrogen converted to electricity to charge a battery car. And it's kind of like, what's wrong with this picture? But, you know, or like AAA, if they want to go out on the road and charge somebody up, that's a lot of batteries.
So yeah,
they may use hydrogen and a fuel cell to charge the battery car, get them enough to get off the road.
Yeah, so they had basically the fuel cell, right?
Yeah.
A mobile fuel cell, and then there was a big tanker full of hydrogen, and then it would use to be charged, you know, it's a mobile car charger.
Yeah.
And there was a company here that just went bankrupt, too, where they had a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. There was an auction for those.
Okay.
Those things sold cheap. I think those were just portable chargers that had giant batteries.
Could be.
I think I want to say they had like 20 kilowatt or 50 kilowatt hour batteries or something that you could tow and then an emergency. Anyway.
But back to Hydrogen Day.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. So the other thing we're going to have there is we will have several Mirais. Obviously, you would expect that. There's a guy here in town, Brendan Doner, give him a shout out, who has decided to buy a Mirai and buy a fueler from Electric Green and rent out the Mirai through Turo, which is kind of like an Airbnb for your car.
Ooh, that's expensive. So $100,000 fueler.
Well, yeah.
Is it a new Mirai? Because new Mirais are
also... No, he bought a cheap one.
Okay, like a $10,000 Mirai.
You know, so the folks in California that have to take a bath on resale are helping us here.
So his business idea is you go buy the refueler,
yep,
park it in your garage or wherever at home, and then you fill up the Mirai with hydrogen, and then you have people rent it.
Right. And what he's doing is he's going to station these at the Marriott that's right there by NREL, National Renewable Energy Labs.
Yeah.
And so if you're a scientist or somebody, you come to NREL and you need a rental car anyway, you rent this one. And the nice thing is you pick it up at the Marriott, you return it at the Marriott, and you don't put fuel in it. He takes care of all of that. So kind of a fun business model. And frankly, he's doing it just to promote it.
NREL has a hydrogen station.
They do. They actually have two. They have one for light duty, and then they also have another one that they're doing research for the big 18-wheelers, because they'll take, you know, a car will take 5 kilograms. The 18-wheelers might take 60 or 80 or 100 kilograms, and they may be fueling back to back. So it takes a lot more.
How many 8 kilograms? You said a car.
Well, a Mirai is what, about 6? I'm sorry, did I misspeak?
Yeah. So in California, it was $19 a kilogram. So 6 times 19.
Well, it was up to 33. 36.
Wow, I mean, holy cow.
It's crazy. And
We asked NREL if we could, because we thought about buying one, and they said, no, it's government.
Yeah, I mean,
those are due to COVID. So.
Well, there's security issues things, so they don't do it.
YouTubers showing up.
But anyway, so Brendan, his company is called Breathe. Give them a shout out if you think you want to just get a wild hair to rent a Mirai. And I may do that before I buy one, but as soon as we've got a
few. Have you driven one?
Oh, yeah. I've driven NREL's car. Okay, they let me drive it one time to actually Denver Auto Show.
Have you tried an EXO?
I haven't tried an EXO yet, okay. No. But the Mirai, we were low on fuel, so I was trying to see how much mileage I could get out of it. But there was one point where I did have to punch it, and yeah, my hair flew back.
You know? Yeah, it will. So let me ask you this. Maybe we should get a hold of Honda and see if they'll do a long-term. Honda, are you listening? Hello, Honda, if you're listening. We will have a chance. When do you think our hydrogen network will be set up? Can I go to Jane's house and fill up?
Yeah. Well, I mean, get it from Jane, but...
I don't want to have you
Brendan,
speak for...
Brendan's supposed to be starting his fueler here. He was supposed to take delivery in July, and they postponed for just a little bit. Things always take longer, but soon...
Where does he live?
Where is he? He's not too far from NREL, I don't think, kind of the Golden area. Okay, so for people who aren't familiar with Denver, that's really kind of the west side.
I'm just trying to give Honda a reason to loan us one as a long-term loaner.
Well,
I don't want to loan one if we don't have a way to fill it up. But if we have a way to fill it up, that's not crazy expensive.
You and I can talk later because I want to reach out to Honda, Hyundai, and Toyota. Yeah, and if you're listening, to basically do a... like a captive fleet of beta testers here. You know, the issue the automakers have is they don't want to start selling cars wholesale, or not wholesale, but selling cars outright at the dealers and providing service till there's a network to support it of fueling stations. And the number that the Toyota people
have told
is like
chicken five. Chicken or the egg, we're back.
Five stations. So what I want to propose is that Colorado Hydrogen Network sponsors some drivers that understand there's only one place to fuel the car, that you better have another vehicle as a backup, but that we can start getting some cars out there, start using these fueling stations that are going to be coming up, and start establishing this market. And of course, the other piece of this is that we're also working to try to do workforce development, get the technicians to work on these. Because you think about it, 10,000 PSI, if you've got a little pinhole leak and you run your finger by it, you're probably going to cut it off. right? And you can't smell or see or taste hydrogen. And so there's a whole procedure for safe handling of hydrogen. And so we're trying to get that developed here as well.
Anyway, if Toyota, Hyundai, or Honda, you're listening to us, we would love to get a long-term review of a hydrogen car. And we'll work with Brian.
And Jane. Jane
Allo. Or Brendan, yeah. And we'll make sure we can actually run it. And we'll get you a real-world review of the thing from Colorado. Last question before we wrap this up.
Sure.
And I was trying to figure this out, but I never got – maybe this is above your pay grade and my pay grade. But, you know, the problem with internal combustion engines is, of course, they run on oxygen. And so the higher you go, the less combustion there is, less air density, the less power you make. And that's a significant thing here in Colorado where you can easily drive to 10, 12,000 feet above sea level. Does hydrogen suffer from that same issue, a fuel cell?
Well, it does use oxygen.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about, because there's less oxygen density, right?
For the reaction.
So there's less oxygen kind of zipping around the atmosphere.
So that's a good point. But I believe all of the fuel cell cars have got, it's not exactly a turbo, but it's more like a compressor or an air pump or a fan or something.
Hydrogen
like
turbo. How cool is that?
To make sure that it's
called a super turbo.
Yeah, to make sure it's well aspirated.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So it does, you can, like a regular turbocharger, right, jam more air into it. So you can replace density with volume, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right? Exactly, exactly.
So even though there's less air density, you could have more air.
Right, right. And as far as I know, that's not a problem. Now, I tell you what, as soon as I get a Mirai, and you can do this too, we'll do some tests up at altitude and see.
Have you drank? Maybe I'm on what bond? Have you actually drank the water that comes out of a hydrogen car?
I have not, but I have done that. I absolutely would.
We have done that.
Yeah.
The problem is it's distilled, and so it doesn't have electrolytes.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of, you know.
Well, that wouldn't be your staple, but, you know, in a pinch.
It's not going to hurt you,
I mean, if you're off in the woods somewhere and you got a flat tire, you could drink it. But,
it tasted kind of metally, and I think that wasn't from the water. I think it was from the pipes that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where it comes out. Yeah.
So, well, this has been fun. Robert, thanks for having me on. And again, encourage all the listeners to reach out to me. I mean, that's why I'm here. This is what I do.
And with last question, I love this topic. It's fascinating. So the military with the ZH2 was talking about having the fuel cell actually not just power the battery, but power anything else. How hard would that be, right? I don't know why, like, the Nexo doesn't have an inverter on it that allows you to then plug your refrigerator into it if there is a power outage.
Right. You absolutely could. There's no reason why you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the manufacturers decide to do that.
Yeah. You know, it could be an option.
All right. And what was your podcast again, so people know?
Yeah. The podcast is the Hydrogen Nowcast. It's all one word, Hydrogen Nowcast. Check that out. And then again, it's colorado-hydrogen.org is the website.
Yeah. And if you guys want to shoot us an email, it's info@TFLcar. And if you're a manufacturer, you know how to get a hold of us. So thank you guys for joining us. Brian, thank you very much.
Yeah.
This was a hoot.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. And as always, here's my t-shirt. Yep, that's right. alltfl.com, because we do put out a lot of, I hate to use the word content, but it's going to become content, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So if you want to see all the latest and greatest in automotive, car, truck, and motorcycle news, head on over to alltfl. We'll see you next time. Ciao.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.